Now, I'm sure you're all very holy people, aren't you? And what you didn't see is this. I put my books on here and it just slowly started to tip that way. But out the corner of my eye, I caught it. So this is very unprofessional. Just one second. There you go. Okay, I think that's good. We'll give it a go if it all drops off. I was once at Soul Survivor. Who, hands up, have you been to, you went to Soul Survivor? Yes. There's a story that goes like this. Mike Pilafarci was moving. Oh, Mike Pilafarci, he's going to come to STC and speak next year, which is very exciting. I've forgotten when he's coming at some point. I think it might be next autumn, so that'll be amazing. And apparently he had a kind of lectern thing like this, a microphone stand, and he put his thumb in the top left and it got stuck. So he spent the whole time speaking with his thumb stuck there. So I don't want to do that. Anyway, folks, it's lovely to see you. If you're here for the first time, welcome to Philly, St. Thomas's Philadelphia at Network Church Sheffield. Does this sound a bit echoey? Was it all right? Was it just me? It's just me, thank you. My name's Tom, I'm the vicar, team leader, and it is great to be able to welcome you today. I want to say a couple of things. I want to say a massive thank you to Jack Hampson. Guys, let's decide. We'll go for it. And to Becca and Eliza, and for Becca, for all the Sundays that you've let Jack out of the house, and I hope he came back in one piece. Often in these kind of these roles are all the stuff that we don't see, and it's all the last minute changes that need to be made. And so Jack, you have done that brilliantly, and I am incredibly grateful for all you've done. And for Tim Jeffrey, brother, your hair is increasingly looking like mine. One of the great joys I think we felt every time that we met at Philly's, we wanted to talk about the city of Sheffield. We felt very much the verses from Jeremiah. If you've been to Philly before, you think, is this Groundhog Day? Are they always talking about the same thing? The answer is yes. We're looking at this same verse three times, hopefully looking at three different things. But we wanted to hear from you guys, essentially, because many of you are working in Sheffield, doing lots of different things, and we wanted to hear from you. Often so much of church life, even in a church like ours, where we kind of draw a certain amount of pride almost that we are very missional, we can, if we're not careful, become increasingly church focused. So all we hear is what's happening in church, and so you can feel like your value is all that you bring to church related activities. And what we're trying to say, and one of the shifts that we'd love to make, is that if you are called to work in the city of Sheffield, that is your vocation, that is your calling from God. So you want to give time to hear what it is you're doing, and if you get around Tim long enough, you'll know that he has a passion to see people in employment. Work is a God-given thing. And so when people have the terrible season of not having it, then it does affect, as he said brilliantly, it's a spiritual issue. So just amazing, Tim. Thank you so much for that. If you've got a Bible, folks, if you would turn to Jeremiah. If you don't have a Bible, you maybe got it on your phone. I'm old school. I'm afraid I still love to hold an actual book. And if you don't have it, it's actually, some of it is written over there on that beautiful mural. And it goes without saying, we are so grateful to Philly, to Mike Rutter and Sam and the team here who let us have this place. And we're just so grateful to those guys. So this is what it says. This was from the prophet Jeremiah. This is what the Lord Almighty, in Jeremiah 29, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Just note verse 7, if you can, folks. I'll read it again for dramatic effect. Okay, that worked. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. So over the last couple of weeks, the last few months, sorry, I should say, in May, we looked at why these passages are so significant in the life of the church, and they have been throughout the ages, particularly because they were picked up by a theologian called Augustine. And he wrote a book called The City of God, in which he said, he makes this point, that in every city, there are two cities. There's a city where the dominion of the enemy of God reigns, and then God places his believers under the rule and reign of the kingdom of God. And so as we work for God's kingdom to come, we mirror what is spoken of by the prophet John in Revelation that talks about the final city, the great city, Jerusalem, the garden city. What starts in the garden in Genesis ends in Revelation in the garden city. And so as we labor with God, as we are filled with his presence, as we work with unemployed people, if you're going to school tomorrow, if you haven't been isolated, we have 2 out of our 3 kids are in isolation. Come on, we're nearly there. If you're working in the NHS or you're going tomorrow and you're a laborer or you're going to carry bricks, we are all doing things. If we're known by Jesus, we are doing those things for God. We are working for this peace and the prosperity of the city. And so what Augustine does, he says that's a kind of mantra for how Christians understand cities. Because for so long, whenever we think of finding spiritual life, we often think of retreating from people, going into the countryside. Now, I love going into the Peak District. Praise Jesus that we live in such a beautiful... Actually, you don't actually need to go into the National Park. You just kind of go certain parts of Sheffield. It is so beautiful. But actually, because God loves people, and the reason that God loves people is because we bear his image, is that cities are on God's heart. And so what Augustine's work has become a key theological tome, really, is how we understand our place within cities. Now, does that mean, folks, that if you've been around St. Thomas's a very long time, we are going to do what it was, particularly under Mike Breen, where we sent loads of people into the city? No, it's a new season. But what it does mean is that we begin to realize that God has placed us in the city of Sheffield. Some are born here. Some are called here. Some just ended up here and realized it was part of God's plan for their life. We are here for a time. For such a time as this. Maybe you're here as a student, or maybe you've just finished and you're not sure what to do with your time. Well, seek the peace and the prosperity of the city that God has placed you in. Maybe you're in a season in a job and you're frustrated with your job. Seek the peace and the prosperity of the city which God has placed you. Get to know your neighbours. Put the bin, if they leave their bins out, take them in. Don't get annoyed about it. Bless the people around you. It's this intensely pragmatic way in which the prophet Jeremiah tells his God's people to live. And in a moment, we'll unpack why. So that's why we're thinking about these passages in these 3 Philly Sundays, because we can try and gather as many people as we can, thinking about what it looks like to live in the city of Sheffield as God's people. And then last week, I've got to get this right, last month, come on, Tom, you can do it. Last month, we had Bishop Pete, who's, I think we'll all agree, as a bishop, has the finest haircut in the whole of Christendom. Absolutely amazing. He looks like a bouncer. He's a big man. I won't mess with that guy. And if you didn't watch it on YouTube, you must watch Bishop, because he was so challenging. He asked the question, what difference are we making? He was like, I thought he was going to come and bring a pastoral encouragement, but he didn't. He bought it, man. He was swinging his Episcopal bat that day. What difference are you making? What difference are we making? What difference are we as a church going to make? And then today I want us to think about this. In these amazing pivotal words that have inspired how theologians have understood how we relate to the city, there's something that has struck me looking at this time. What must it have been like for those people hearing it, Jeremiah's letter for that first time? What was the environment that they were living in at the moment? And what are the kind of conditions of the heart that we need to hear that call? Because let me tell you this, I think it probably came at the worst possible moment. When Jeremiah's letter came, it would have arrived in kind of a diplomatic pouch from Jerusalem to Babylon, and in it contains Jeremiah's wisdom. And I think it would have come at a really bad time. And I want us to think about why that might be the case. Before we do that, I want to ask you the question. Do you ever have the idolatry of perfect timing? What I mean is this, like, I often used to think, when I was younger, you said, when I get to 30, I'm going to have everything sorted out. Do you ever think like that? And then I got to 30, and I thought, do you know, when I get to, I used to do it in 10 years, folks. Occasionally, I do on even numbers, never odd. I don't know why. But I think maybe when I get to 40, I'll be a lot more holy. Now, I'm at 42, and I'm thinking maybe 50 is the time. Because I'm looking at some of you guys out there, I'm thinking you're looking pretty holy. You know, like it feels like this isn't quite the right time. Like it could be maybe something's going on in personally, maybe health-wise. You think, well, no, it's not the right time. God, perhaps are you feeling the call of God? You think, well, Lord, I'm not sure this is the right time right now, Lord, because I'm a bit tired because I've got three small children and one doesn't sleep very well. So maybe, God, if you would come back in a couple of years when I'm more mature, when my hair's grown back, when I've read more of the Bible, where I'm getting up a little bit earlier, maybe I'll do it then, Lord. Certainly, Lord, don't want to do it now because there's a pandemic on, Lord, if you haven't noticed. And I know it's Freedom Day tomorrow, Lord, but I ain't sure so sure about Freedom Day now because it seems like people are changing the tune on that stuff. Maybe, Lord, you could come back to me in a little while when it feels better. Do you ever notice, have those moments? Because I do all the time. The kind of perfect timing idolatry. That moment where often I've heard this many times in my line of work. I'm just not in a good place right now. And sometimes that's for really good reasons. But the problem is this, folks. Often when God calls us, and often in the Bible, when God calls people in the Bible, they're not often in a great place. And that's part of the point. Because when God calls us, he says, you're not in a great place, but he's always in a great place. And when he calls us and we're not in a great place, he helps us to get into the better place. I wonder what it would have been like for the recipients of Jeremiah's letter. Taken captive from their home. 3,000 of the most educated upper to middle class Jews of the day. With King Jehoiachin, probably the shortest reigning king in Judah's history, taken, made to walk hundreds and hundreds of miles against their own will. Because we know one of the strategies of the Babylonians was to take the very educated, the very middle classes, and try and assimilate them into the prevailing culture, which was Babylonian. What would it be like for them? And what we do know is that at that moment, there was this, not only was a great battle going on because of the Babylonian army, the Egyptian army, of which Israel, remember God's vision of Israel? We've been tracking through Moses in the Old Testament, and God's vision given to Abraham, and it just seems like it's all gone. Jerusalem, this beautiful city right at the heart of God's place, Israel. Seemingly now lying in tatters, taken into exile. And then Jeremiah's letters come. And not only were they taken captive, but there was this cultural war going on. There was this sense in which that somehow that there was a belief that Babylon was going to fall. And some prophets were beginning to prophesy the fall of Babylon. Any minute now, it's all going to collapse. And there was great confusion. We can't relate to that at all at this time, can we? Like maybe you're an anti-vaxxer. Or maybe you're a pro-vaccine person. Or we just can't get it right. And if you watch social media, or if you look at Twitter, I'm on Twitter. Some people call it the outrage channel because there's a lot of angry people on there. And this season of life just seems to be making them. Actually, there's a lot of angry Anglicans on there. Follow Anglican Twitter. Honestly, I think there are some people who have just been locked up for too long, folks, and they just go to social media and take it out on there. There was this great sense of confusion. What was God doing? Was he the one who he said he was? Because where is he? You ever have those moments in life? Where are you, God? That's right. Preach it. Give him the microphone, Ruth. He can have a go. Where is God in these moments? And so there was a great confusion. There were prophets who were saying, the Babylon's going to finish any minute now, come on. There's a guy called Hananiah said, guys, we're going to be in exile for 2 years only. Come on, don't bother settling down, just don't bother unpacking. Keep your suitcases. Don't unpack your suitcases, we're going to go very soon. There's going to be a liberating army coming. Get ready, let's fight. And then Jeremiah writes this letter. And he says something that he's prophesied before. Jeremiah is a man of doom. You wouldn't want to sit by him in the barbecue because honestly, he's probably not the... He could turn milk sour, this guy. You know, there are just some people that you're with them, they just can kill the atmosphere. Probably like one of my talks. I know that's what you're thinking, right? You came in happy, right now you've got to this, you're feeling bad. But there are just some people, they just can kill the atmosphere. Well, that was Jeremiah. But that was part of his call. And he writes to the people and he says, you're going to be there for 70 years. 70? Because that's what he told them. That was the word that God had given to Jeremiah. And he writes to them and he says, stay where you are. The God of Israel says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses, settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I've carried you into. Pray to the Lord for it. Because if it prospers, you will prosper. I don't know what I'd have done if I'd heard that. God, we were taken against our will. We're living under this foreign ruler. They have freedoms. They could build their own houses. It's like, God, we are victims here, God. Jeremiah, what are you doing? What's going on? And there's a moment in this letter that says this. This is the word from God. It says, to all those I carried into exile. God is in it. Sometimes there are things happening in life which make no sense at the moment. There are things that happen in life that make no sense 10, 20 years on. There are things in life that should never happen to any of us. And really what the scriptures here say to us is that God is with his people. He's a covenant God who has always promised his presence with his people. And as the raiding armies take them from Jerusalem, and as they walk the lonely journey, all 3,000 of them, heading to the unknown Babylon, he says, I carried you. It's this image of intimacy. It's an image of God's presence with his people. I am with you. Sometimes we can get drawn into what I call the analysis paralysis. Constantly going round in the mind, God, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Why is this happening? The Lord doesn't give an explanation. He just says, I've carried you into exile. I'm with you. If God is with you, he will get you through it. There may be great pain. There may be great heartache. There may be great confusion. But he is with them. Isaiah 43. Isaiah says, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. He doesn't say there won't be any waters. He says they won't sweep over you. They may be coming up to your neck. And it may be a bit touch and go. But he does promise his presence. He says, when you walk through the fire, Isaiah 43, 1 to 5, you won't be burned. It doesn't say you won't feel the heat. It doesn't say that when you walk through the fires, the flames will extinguish and you won't feel any pain. He says, they won't burn you. Doesn't promise we won't have tough times in life. That is not the Bible. It's something that gets wrapped up into Christian culture. It's not the Bible. There are difficult things that happen to people in Scripture. But God is always with his people. And if God is with his people, God will get them through it. In fact, God promises later on in that chapter that he will bring them home. So God says he's with them. I remember there was a moment when I was at New Wine, which is an amazing event and organization. It was a New Wine Leaders several years ago. And I remember it well because it snowed like crazy. Do you remember? Alan, we came home once, and Helen, in their faithful Honda, Alan drove us home in a blizzard, which was great fun. Couldn't see a thing, but he did an amazing job. And at that point, I'd been probably back at St. Thomas. Chris and I came back to St. Thomas's in 2016. And I'm going to quote something, and I've just lost it. Here it is. And the Lord, Mick and Tricia, who were leading the church at the time, they finished in August last year. They said, will you come back and would you take the church on from us? And we felt the Lord was in it. We came back in 2016. And the Church of England, the authorities in the Church of England, had not given the all clear. And so we'd moved back, and it really was a bit of a faith thing, because we were like, Lord, what if they say no? And I don't know about you, but I was finding that people who were younger than me were beginning to plant churches, some people that you probably know. And I was beginning to think, Lord, have we got the call wrong? Because Jesus, what if this doesn't quite work out, Lord? What do we do then? Because I'm looking at all my mates and they're doing very exciting things. And we were running Family Church. Praise Jesus for Family Church. Some of you here, Tim, fantastic times. But it was a season that was quite hard. Because I thought, God, I'm not quite sure what I'm doing in the present. It's not really what I sense the call to do. But I know you've called me. And at New Wine, I'm from the West Midlands. I'm from a place called Warsaw, which is just north of, it's near Birmingham. It's easy to say Birmingham because people say Warsaw, people assume Poland. And then you have to get into a conversation. You know, not Poland, you know, it's Birmingham. Just say Birmingham, it's easier. And I don't really cry very often. And I remember at New Wine just thinking, God, I cannot do this anymore. And I remember wailing like a banshee. I think Alan was too lost in third heaven to realize what's going on. But a guy called Richard England, who some of you may know, he was here many years ago. He prayed for me. And he said this. He said, and I wrote it down in my red book, my yellow book, which is I write down all kinds of things I'm thinking. I have a habit of leaving it places, so I assume if you find it in church, you won't look inside. He said this. This is what he sensed God saying. Stand still and see what the Lord does. Your call in this season is to get through it, not get out of it. It's God's problem to get you out of it. He said, your call is to take care of yourself, take care of family, to take care of your call. Do you know, guys, I'll be honest, in that moment, I was looking for jobs all the time and praying that something might come up that would get me out of it. But then these words, when I reflect on that season, I remember these words. If God's got you there and he's with you, then in his timing, he'll work it out. And the rest, they say, is history. Because 5-6 years later, here I am. It means, though, in that season, that I had to give up self-pity. I had to give up a sense of victimhood, the kind of internal heart cry, it's not fair, God. I used to do all this stuff in Cambridge. No, I'm not doing any of that. My friends are planting churches. God, have you forgotten? The internal narrative was one of victimhood and of one of self-pity. And it was time to give that back to the Lord and trust him in the everyday with the small thing and recognizing sometimes God does not give us an explanation. Folks, God does not always owe us an explanation. He calls us to faith. He calls us to trust. Maybe there's a challenge today in your marriage. Maybe there's a time frame that isn't quite, God is not doing what you want him to do in the time frame that you have set him. Maybe he isn't sticking to the plan that you've laid out for him. He has a habit of doing that because he is God. And it's his prerogative to do this stuff. And maybe you've caught in the analysis paralysis where you're trying to work out second guessing. Maybe today it's time to say, God, you've carried me into this. I'm just going to release it back to you and say that you will get me out of it. That's what I wonder when I think about those precious people at that time receiving that letter from Jeremiah. And in this cultural moment where there is great confusion, particularly around Freedom Day tomorrow, and this season of COVID-19, and we're coming out of it, the thing that I think that Jeremiah calls his people to is to move in the opposite spirits. Bishop Sandy Miller, who was the vicar of HDB when I worked there nearly 20 years ago now, used about moving in the opposite spirit. What that means is this: whatever is the prevailing spirit, whatever is the prevailing attitude, you walk in the opposite way. So rather than the exiles waiting desperately to get out of it, waiting for God to take them back to Jerusalem, that they're now told to stay 70 years. So they've got a choice. You stay 70 years in a silo, a religious silo where you feel safe. Or you can come in the opposite spirit and say, we're going to be generous people. We're going to be planted. Around that time when Richard England, my mate, prayed for me at New Wine, Chris and I made the decision that we would plant a garden in our front garden. And if we were to have a front garden, it was a bit crazy. So we started to grow vegetables and things like that. We got to meet our lovely neighbours because we began to think, we don't know how long we are here for. We don't know how long we're in this season for, but we're going to stay in this season. We're going to get planted in this season, and we're going to live here like we were here forever. We're going to make this house our home. We're going to own this season. It's a similar thing that happened years ago when we were wrestling with infertility. You've told the story, but a man called Mike Breen, a former leader of this church, said to me, he said, you need to plan as if it's going to happen. So we bought an estate car, and we bought a dog called Archie, who's now 12, and bless him, he's coming into land. So we made a decision. Start the process. Move in the opposite spirit. Is this perpetual cycle? Is this going to happen? Well, let's make a decision. Let's plan for it to happen. Trust that God will do what God does, and God brings breakthrough, and God is faithful. So that's what we did. We move in the opposite spirit. In the season where there is endless confusion, folks, around us, then we move in the opposite spirits. Don't get drawn into conspiracy theories of anti-vaxxing or stuff like that. We move in the opposite spirit. We are to embrace the model of Jesus, God incarnate, the one who walks amongst us. We're to love our neighbors. We're to ignore the crazy stuff. We are to be who God wants us to be in that time. For example, as a church in the next weeks, we're still going to wear our mask. We're still going to keep some sense of social distance because we're not going to get drawn into the cultural wars of this season. We're going to take the ethics of the New Testament, particularly 1 Corinthians 8, which when Paul talks about food laws, he says, we take our freedom always in relation to other people. So we have freedom not to wear these things. But there are people in our church who are battling life-threatening diseases. And so for the sake of them, we will wear them for another season. We'll review it when we get to September, but that is the decision that we've taken because we want to be a place where everybody, we want to bear with one another in this time. And I know it's hot and it's all right for me because I'm not wearing it, but you guys are. But for a little while longer, folks, for the sake of some people, we will continue to wear these just for a few more weeks and review and pray that COVID is broken in our nation. We'll move in the opposite spirit. And finally, as Jeremiah tells the exiles to pray, Pray for the people that took them from their homes. Pray for the ones who took them into captivity. It's just bonkers. Can only be the Lord. Pray. I think I've come to realise more and more in my old age. When I get to 50, I'm going to be ace at praying. I just want to say that to you now. I used to think growing up that a marker of maturity was how much I read the Bible. I think now it's prayer. Prayer is the language, the connection that we have with God, that we can talk to our Father in heaven all the time. Like Brother Lawrence would wash up in the monastery and he realized that he could talk to God just as much as he could talk to him in a chapel. Prayer is the language that God gives us. It's an intimate connection. And so as we're called to pray for the city, we are called to do that in an intimate walk with God. Because if we're going to answer Bishop Pete's question, which what difference is it that we are making? And if we're going to make a difference, folks, and if we're going to do the things that the Lord is asking us to do, then prayer has to be a foundation part of that in the life of our church, but the life of who we are. And if you think, well, I don't know how to pray, I'm going to wait till the 10 years until I'm sorted, let me give you a tip. It literally is talking to the Lord in any and every moment, in every moment of the day, except when you're asleep or you're doing other things, but you're literally having a conversation with him, talking to him. And as you talk to him, we become like him because we get to hear his voice. And that's the intimate walk that God calls his people to as we seek and serve the city. It strikes me that in some senses, in this kind of, in Jeremiah's letter, it's not so much about what God is asking people to do. It's more about calling his people to embrace a level of character. It's who he's calling them to become, to develop trust in him, faith, moving in the opposite spirits, being a people of love, rooted in prayer. The pain of that season of exile becomes the learning ground to trust and develop God in his obedience. What does it look like for us, folks, as a church family in the next season? If I'm honest, if you said to me, one day you're going to lead a church and it's going to be in a global pandemic, I'd say, no, thank you very much. Ask somebody else to do it. Well, that was my prayer, actually. It's God, there's way better people than me to do this. And that's probably true, actually. I've actually settled that is true. I could give you a list. But he's asked me to do it. And there are times when I think, God, I wish this was in the 90s. We're like Toronto Blessing and John Wimber, because that would have been awesome, God. And cool songs that Sam Watson always sings, because that would have been a great season to be a church leader, Jesus. And he's like, no, it's this time, 2021, in a pandemic. But Lord, what if people don't come back? He's like, well, have I not called you? Have I not carried you into this role? Can I not get you out of it? Okay, God, what does it look like for us? I think it looks a bit like this, folks. That the Lord probably is calling us to gather back for a season. That's something that Alan Ward very helpfully said. Alan, you had a fine moment, I have to say, brother. It's a good moment. In this next season, God will call us to gather back around Sundays. And we'll do the social distance bit for the next season. And then we'll keep tracking with guidance and COVID rates and all that kind of stuff. But we need to gather back as best we can. It's likely that the Lord is going to call us to surrender the best parts of our church to planting. And I'll be brutally honest, there are days when I'm very excited about that and there are days when I'm terrified about it. Because I thought, well, but what if so-and-so go and so-and-so go and so-and-so? Or what if we have no money left, God? He's like, well, did I not carry you into it? Would I not do it? The other thing is, folks, we're called to make disciples. Because that's the thing that Jesus asks his church to do. So we become like him and do what he does. And give it away, folks. Come in the opposite spirit. Where there's a desire for control, we move in the opposite spirit and work with the authorities and the institutions and ask the Lord, what is it that he wants to do in our city at this time? moving out of post-pandemic. Because there's a lot to do, folks. There's a lot of people to connect with. There's a lot of people to love. There's a lot of neighbors to reach. There's a lot of churches to plant. And the one who calls us is faithful. And he will do it. And he'll do it as we, like the exiles, do the simple things day in, day out. Love our neighbors. Seek the peace and prosperity. Walk into the office tomorrow in the opposite spirit of the toxic bitterness, perhaps, that we find ourselves in. Loving. Prayerfully. Filled with the Spirit. Asking the Lord, what is it he's wanting to do today? And moving forward with humility, depending on him. Trusting him. That he will do it. It'll be a bit of a ride, folks. I don't know how we're going to do it. But he does. The question is, will we go when he calls? Will we go when he calls? That's Martin, so tick that off. Because he's brought us to this city at this time. Let's stand.